His Hands and His Feet, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Dear sinner, dear doubter, dear skeptic, see His hands and feet. The forgiveness of my sin lies in the hands and the feet of the crucified and risen Jesus.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift during the Easter season. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us during the 50 days of Easter.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, May the 17th. Big news over the weekend. It's not anything new, although it's still rare, still very rare. The Episcopal Church USA ordained yet another openly gay bishop, this time a woman by the last name of Glasspool. And this is at the end of what? About, if I'm counting correctly, about 5 or 6 years of essentially and very politely thumbing their nose at the Anglican Communion, the greater group of Anglicans in the world, 77 million strong. The Anglican Communion back in 2004 told the Episcopal Church USA not to do this again after they'd done it already once with Bishop Gene Robinson in 2003. And yet now they've done it again. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about the ordination this weekend of the second openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA, Bishop Keith Ackerman. Before we bring him on to talk about this story, let's get the story from the CBS News affiliate in Los Angeles, KCAL.
A woman today became the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles. It's a move likely to bring further tension to a church already divided over homosexuality. CBS 2's Kara Finstrom is live now in Long Beach with reaction. Kara?
Well, those ceremonies just wrapped up behind us. They ran long, about an hour and a half longer than expected, and they were punctuated both by shows of support and opposition. Thousands of Episcopalians came to Long Beach to witness two major firsts for the Diocese of Los Angeles.
Because it's history.
The Hagans family wanted to see the consecrating of the diocese's first female bishops.
For one thing, it's because they're women. And I think that's great.
The other big first drew much more opposition. New Bishop Mary Douglas Glasspool is also this diocese's first openly gay bishop. She'll serve a church divided by conservatives who do not approve of homosexuality.
Leaders of churches should not be gay. They should not be immoral.
And those who believe the Bible scripture is open to interpretation.
For people who don't have outcasts, we're looking forward to the fact that all humanity can find a place here in the Episcopal Church to worship.
Glasspool is just the second openly gay Episcopalian bishop in the country. Back in 2003, the election of the first, an openly gay man in New Hampshire, caused protests and the breaking away of some parishes. Glasspool is a 56-year-old priest from Baltimore who says she's been with her life partner for 22 years. She hopes to use her new position to bring the church unity. Today, in the midst of support for that mission.
I have a brother who's also openly gay, and so it's a way for him to identify, see a religious sort of leader who is also gay.
And in the midst of strong protests, a church some 200 years old took a decisive step towards defining its future.
Joining us to talk about this story, Bishop Keith Ackerman, a regular guest, president of Forward in Faith, a reform group committed to the conservative cause of Anglicanism in North America. Bishop Ackerman, welcome back.
Thank you. Pleasure to hear your voice.
Well, now Bishop Mary Glasspool said Friday before the consecration, we are being the church we say we are. We're not just saying it, we're doing it, and there's something very powerful about that. What's your reaction?
Oh, she's absolutely correct. That is precisely what's happening. The Diocese of Los Angeles and those who support this action are being the church that they would like to be. The issue, of course, is this the church that Jesus wants it to be?
So has this been a surprise to you that they would do it again after worldwide Anglicanism, essentially in 2004, said to the Episcopal Church USA, please don't do this again?
Well, I can tell you that when I rose to debate the question at Lambeth Conference, when the wording was to exercise restraint, I used the analogy of a man going through a stop sign, being pulled over, and getting into a debate with the policeman. And policeman tells him that he should not do that anymore. He starts hitting with the stick, and the man says, do you want me to stop or slow down? That is to say, do you want exercise restraint or not exercise restraint? The Episcopal Church, you see, has not exercised restraint. As a matter of fact, it was just waiting for another opportunity to go through the stop sign to be able to move on ahead and to do precisely what it thinks, because the Episcopal Church thinks of itself as an independent denomination in the United States that is self-governing and has no relationship to anything else in the rest of the world. So ultimately, it is most concerned about being Anglican when it means being invited to serve on worldwide commissions. At that time, it considers itself to be part of worldwide communion. The rest of the time, it thinks of itself as being able to do whatever it should be able to do whenever it wishes to do, and does so by calling itself prophetic.
What is the Episcopal Church USA saying, both to worldwide Anglicanism and to the many Anglicans here in the United States and North America who have been deeply distressed by the movement of this province for the last 30 years?
Thanks for your input, and we'll take it under consideration. That's the extent of it. In other words, it makes no difference what you think. Even the term itself, inclusive, that was being discussed by a few of the people who were there, is a little bit humorous, because there's nothing to indicate that God is inclusive. As a matter of fact, from what we can determine, God is comprehensive. And that's a big difference, because to be inclusive means that we determine on our checklist what's in and what's not in. But God never contradicts himself. That is to say, the church is not called to override what God has already ruled or decreed. And it is not a matter of the church doing whatever it feels is appropriate. I think it's a matter of the church doing what God has deemed to be appropriate. The church is a servant church. The other thing that is so remarkable here is that it is clear that the church is the bride of Christ. So for traditionalists, this consecration is a double whammy. First of all, do the pastoral epistles, 1 Timothy, for example, talk about what the qualifications of a bishop are to be in the feminine or not? And second of all, as it relates to the lifestyle that one lives, is this consistent with the Holy Scriptures, the lifestyle that is being lived? In both cases, the answer is a resounding no, it's not consistent. But in the name of inclusivity, or in the name of moving ahead, the Episcopal Church continues to move ahead.
Bishop John Bruno delivered a homily at the consecration. A quote in your reaction, he says, "The world's transformed only if we turn to each other and every one of our brothers and sisters and see the face of Christ superimposed on them. The ones we disagree with most are the ones we're obligated to share our lives and teach the most." What's he saying?
I would say he's absolutely correct, but it does not say that they need to be ordained and consecrated. And therein lies the dilemma, is that there are people who think in a somewhat ludicrous fashion that ordination and baptism are in the same vein. That is to say, the Scriptures put forward something that relates to the relationship between the two. That is, if one can be baptized, one can likewise be ordained, no matter what's going on in their life. And that is simply indefensible.
You said earlier that the Episcopal Church USA has been doing this openly now since 2003 with Gene Robinson and now with Mary Glasspool, and calling itself prophetic. What do they mean by that, and how would you correct that notion? About a minute and a half.
To be prophetic, of course, means to proclaim the truth in season and out of season in a way in which it's consistent with Scripture and likewise carries with it a sense of future reality. On the other hand, to be disobedient is very, very different from being prophetic. And the Anglican Communion has already spoken. Rather than claiming that it's being prophetic, the Episcopal Church needs just to be honest and say, we are going to practice here in canonical and civil disobedience without regard for what the rest of the Anglican Communion believes or what the Christian Church has even taught before, because we're doing so in the name of justice.
Then, with only about 30 seconds, what should the Anglican Communion worldwide do in reaction to this now, the second consecration of an openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA?
Well, it appears to me that if Episcopalians wish to be able to function independently, then they ought to be allowed to do so apart from the rest of the Anglican Communion. That is to say, I believe the Episcopal Church has done everything it can do to cease to be Anglican.
Bishop Keith Ackerman is president of Forward in Faith, a reform group committed to the conservative cause of Anglicanism in North America. You'll find a link to Forward in Faith at our website, issuesetc.org. Bishop, thank you very much for being our guest.
God bless you. Always a pleasure to hear your voice, and greetings to all your people.
When we come back from this break, the remainder of today's program on this Monday, May the 17th, we'll spend with Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action. We're going to be talking about psychic hotlines. You say, it's just good, clean fun. And that's what they'll often say if you watch the late-night television shows, the infomercials that say, call now for your psychic reading. There will be small print at the bottom of the screen saying, these calls and the interaction are for entertainment purposes only. Of course, they'll talk about certified psychics, and they'll tell you either what you want to hear or what you think you should be hearing. Is there anything to it? And I'd like to hear this from Gretchen as soon as we start up with her on the other side of the break. What about those who would say it is just for entertainment purposes? I call to have someone to talk to. I don't necessarily take their psychic readings seriously, although, wow, it's amazing how often they're right about me. But I just do it for entertainment. We'll see what Gretchen Passantino has to say about psychic hotlines after this.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is a devotional resource called Stark's Prayer Book. You'll find prayers for patience, strength, sickness, thanksgiving, dying, and more in Stark's Prayer Book. This devotional resource costs $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Stark's Prayer Book.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Philadelphia Daily News has reported a caseworker from the Department of Human Services pressured a teenage mom to have a late-term abortion. It said a day after finding out about the pregnancy, the caseworker told the teen she'd take away the girl's toddler if she had the child. A day earlier, the girl was excited to find out ultrasound showed she was expecting a boy. She was even thinking about names. Then, right after the government official visited, the girl was determined to have an abortion. At 6 months into her pregnancy, she went to a Cherry Hill, New Jersey abortion mill, and her baby boy was killed. The girl's social worker says she was fired for initially refusing to take the girl for the abortion. This is your tax dollars at work.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.